Welcome to the iLEAP's Early Careers podcast, where we explore scientific research related to the biosphere and the atmosphere, and share the personal experiences of our early careers scientists as they navigate their way through academia. Our podcast today forms part of a series, which coincides with the iLEAP's conference during March 2021, and in which we hope to introduce you to some of the Scientific Steering Committee members and also the Early Careers Scientist Network Committee members, and through which we hope you learn more about the aims and motivation behind iLEAPs. On today's iLEAPs podcast, we are talking to Dr. Ben Poulter from the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in the Earth Sciences Division in the USA. So hi, Ben.
Yeah, hi, Gemma.
Hi, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here and appreciate your efforts in coordinating the iLEAPs podcasts.
Yeah, thanks. And so I'm never very good at the introduction bit, so let's just go straight into the questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, that works.
Okay, cool, thanks. So we can get to know a little bit more about you. Could you please tell us about what inspired you really in the first place to become a scientist, please?
Yeah, of course. I mean, so as you mentioned earlier, I'm a research scientist at the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in the Earth Sciences Division. And just a bit about NASA Earth Science Division, where I'm located, we have most likely the largest concentration of Earth scientists working on different aspects of the Earth system. So this includes the biosphere, the cryosphere, the ocean, the atmosphere, and various subdivisions within that, focusing on applications, for example, natural disasters, like fire, landslides, earthquakes, and so on. And currently, my role at NASA is split between carrying out science related to the terrestrial carbon cycle, still trying to look for the missing carbon sink, and then also split to a project where we're developing a new satellite mission, where the study is referred to as the Surface Biology and Geology Designated Observable, where basically we're trying to figure out what sorts of instruments and spacecraft and orbital operations the hyperspectral visible to shortwave infrared and multispectral thermal imager type mission will look like. So sort of what inspired me to get to this point in my career is quite complex, I suppose. But really it came from just a love of nature and being brought up with lots of opportunities to be outside. My accent is a hybrid of a US and a UK accent. So I was born in London and went to school in London until I was about 13 years old. But we spent lots of holidays around the UK, some memorable ones up in the Lake District, but then also traveling overseas and camping throughout France and Spain and really sort of being in nature. And so when it came time for me to go to college, I spent a month hiking on the Appalachian Trail, which is a hiking route from Georgia in the US all the way up to Maine. It's about 2,500 miles long, I think. So I just did a month of it. And that really sort of fixated my interests on what I would do in college in terms of studying the environment.
Brilliant. No, that's cool. So can you tell us a little bit more about your career path then, please, Ben? And like, you know, what things did you have to learn? Like you touched on your education. So is there experiences or training that you've had that's led you to the path that you're now on? And the role that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think answering this question, sort of thinking about early career scientists that might be listening, sort of the main ingredient, I think, was sort of enthusiasm, curiosity, and communications and then taking I think yeah a bit of risk in terms of the decisions that I made, and also being fortunate to be able to sort of take those risks. I as an undergrad, I went to university on the East Coast in the US at University of Connecticut in their School of Agriculture. And I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. I was studying, you know, taking classes like soil ecology and some sort of intro to modeling type classes, and it was all very abstract to me. And I remember sort of walking the halls and seeing these scientific posters by grad students and faculty, and sort of wondering what that was about. And then I changed universities. I moved out to Idaho in the West, in the Rocky Mountains, just and sort of started making the connections between my interest in the environment and what I was learning in as an undergraduate there, taking classes in forest ecology and forest conservation. And so for the first time, I was sort of realizing that there was a whole science involved in terms of how we manage and conserve biodiversity and these landscapes that I was in love with. And so I left college and moved back east and took a job at the New York Botanical Gardens in New York City, where I worked with some ethnobotanists who were connecting sort of the science of botany and systematic botany to medicinal ecology, and took some trips to Central America where we were funded by the National Institutes on Health, searching for plants that would potentially have chemicals within them that could cure things like cancer and other diseases. And so I spent about a year working on this, and really sort of drilling down into some new details of plant ecology that I hadn't been familiar with before. And then met my partner, who was living in California. And so I took a new job in California, working at the Carnegie Institute of Washington on a experiment where we were exposing different grassland species to various levels of atmospheric CO2 and temperature and precipitation and nitrogen treatments. And I'd always sort of had an interest in global change and sort of how humans were affecting the atmosphere and how this might affect ecosystems. And here was an opportunity to really sort of look at what the future might bring for grassland ecosystems. And then this led to opportunities to go to graduate school, where I went to work on an experiment where we scaled up this the CO2 treatment experiment to a full intact pine forest in North Carolina. And I got my PhD at Duke University, studying how global change was affecting forest ecosystems, both from sort of a CO2 effect, but also from a disturbance and vegetation dynamics effect, doing field work and looking at time series of how vegetation has changed. And then that sort of opened up the opportunities for postdoctoral research and land surface modeling. And so I sort of brought with me this interest in botany, physiology, vegetation dynamics, where it all sort of culminated in these integrated land surface models that allow us to do pretty incredible simulation experiments.
Yeah, that's really cool. Thanks, Ben. That's really awesome. So it sounds like you've had like lots of experience, sort of like going out into the field, experimental, also like modeling. So during your career stage, what advice would you give to any early career scientists who might be wanting to study any number of those different things? Or, so what should they be looking for, or where should they really get started if they want to go down that career path?
Yeah, I think a challenge, at least that I have today and have had throughout my career, is sort of having lots of different interests and trying to manage that to become an expert on something where one becomes sort of a go-to person on a particular topic that you've published in, and that opens up opportunities for joining workshops and collaborations on proposals and things like this. And so I think it's important to sort of identify that area of expertise that you want to have, but that if you have broad interests, not to be afraid about sort of making those connections and being creative about how you reach out to people to sort of follow through on those interests that you might have.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Good advice. So also, we can't go like through this podcast without actually mentioning kind of like your other role that you have. So you are now the sort of head of the ILEAP's Scientific Steering Committee. So maybe could you explain a little bit more about this role and sort of what was your motivation for joining this sort of group?
Yeah, so ILEAPS is a global research project of Future Earth, and has been around for at least a decade or two, bringing together a fairly diverse group of scientists, both from their research interests. And so we have ecosystem ecologists, atmospheric chemists, process-based modelers, coming together to try to understand both natural and managed ecosystems and how human activities are sort of changing the way that these ecosystems function. But it's also diverse from the standpoint of trying to be geographically representative. And so the steering committee has representatives from Europe, from Asia, from Africa, and from the US. And we sort of use this geographic diversity to develop training networks and networks for mid and late career scientists to exchange ideas and to really advance both sort of our scientific approaches to understanding the Earth system, but also to sort of make sure that we're bringing in early career scientists into these international networks. And so I was sort of fortunate to have two passports when I graduated with my PhD. So I have my British passport and my US passport. And so this opened up opportunities for me to apply for jobs in Europe. And so I moved to Europe in around 2006. And worked at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany. Also, I worked at the Swiss Federal Research Institute in Birmensdorf, Switzerland, and then at the Lab for Environmental Science in Saclay, France, so just outside of Paris. And I developed a real appreciation for the importance of international networks in terms of advancing science and sort of the value of having different perspectives from a cultural perspective in addressing science questions, but then also just the opportunities that having a diverse sort of international network provides in terms of publications, going after funding resources, in terms of just collaborations. And so sort of the more people you have involved in a project, the more likely it is that you can get different tasks accomplished. And so so at ILEAPS, I sort of bring that perspective with me as co-chair, and really try to use the position to facilitate and sort of maintain the networks that ILEAPS has developed over the past few years. And and then also sort of think about how we can encourage and continue to engage early career scientists through various short courses And then also sort of think about where we can take iLeaps in the future in terms of integrating sort of the unique interdisciplinary science that iLeaps does with increasing demands that are coming to scientists from the policy side.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Ben. And so, can you give us a little bit of a lowdown of the hot topics, maybe, that might be that you think in biosphere atmosphere research, you know, what's really important, like now? What, where is the science going, and what do you think we need to be focusing on?
So I think the hot topics, there's a lot of hot topics. I think
It's a bit of a big question.
what's remarkable to me is that since starting my PhD back in year 2000, being aware of the biodiversity crisis, or the climate change crisis, food security issues, and so on, 20 years ago now. And now, to be living 20 years into the future from my PhD and seeing sort of the full-scale crises that we're in relative to biodiversity, habitat loss, climate change, food security, and natural disasters. And now sort of seeing the importance that science is playing in trying to understand these crises and provide solutions. And so a good example is with climate change and the Paris Agreement and some of the language within the agreement for carbon sinks to play a role in climate mitigation, for countries to have net neutral emissions by mid-century. And there's a real need now for science to directly inform policy. So I think on sort of like where we should be focusing our efforts is in having some familiarity with what the policies are. So on the carbon cycle side, the role of forests in providing some sort of climate solution by withdrawing atmospheric CO2 and storing that in wood and roots and in the soil. Paying attention to the trade-offs that natural climate solutions have on biodiversity, hydrology, and energy balance. If we plant trees further north, how will that affect the albedo and what sorts of local or regional scale warming might result from that? So it's sort of having the foresight to think about the role of natural climate solutions might have, but then also being aware of these really sort of critical trade-offs as we think about using ecosystems to sort of get us out of the trouble that we're in. We're also, I think, well, I know that networks are playing a major role in how we go about doing our science, and so we have networks of sort of disciplinary interests, but then we have also networks of experiments, networks of observations, and networks of satellites. So we have constellations of satellites where we have multiple satellites measuring fairly similar land surface or atmospheric parameters. And then we can tie together those observations to have more frequent revisit or improvements in spatial resolution or spectral resolution. So we're in this sort of phenomenal era of new earth science observations and sort of being aware of what those observations are and then understanding how we can sort of deal with those observations through an appreciation of big data and some of the new techniques for being able to manage big data through machine learning or artificial intelligence or deep learning techniques. Again, there are trade-offs with sort of how we go about applying machine learning type algorithms to big data. There's a risk that we sort of lose the process understanding by using these approaches. which are very efficient at detecting patterns in data, but rely on expertise to understand what is underlying those patterns, what processes underlie those patterns. And so I think as we sort of move into this big data world and these fairly sophisticated algorithms for detecting those patterns, we need to sort of pay attention to the processes that underlie those. So I think it's really sort of, what is we're at this new intersection of science and policy. We're at this new point where we just have sort of phenomenal access to observations and lots of observations. And so how do we sort of maintain the scientific process in terms of hypothesis testing, experiments, and so on in terms of trying to understand these observations?
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Well, lo lots
Yeah,
of work
thanks,
still
Ben. Well, lo lots of work still to be done. There's lots in
Which is good. There's
the future.
lots of opportunities.
Yeah, loads of opportunities and important stuff. Like, this is really big impact stuff, isn't it? So thanks for the chat today, then. So that's kind of like the end of our podcast. So I appreciate you coming on to talk to us
All
for
right,
that
well,
iLeap
thanks so much,
podcast. Thank
Gemma.
you.
And again, we really, iLeap really appreciates sort of your engagement with the early career scientists and developing these podcasts and making them available.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
So that concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. And just to say, if you want to learn more about iLeaps, please go to our website, iLeaps.org, where you'll find a link to our early careers website, where you can follow us on Twitter at iLeaps_ECSN or our Facebook page. Thanks.